Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel and Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel and Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You are listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel and Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning, welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms, every Saturday morning, 11 till 12 live. We're in the studio on Paternoster Row, if you know where that is, we're in the workstation opposite the hubs. Some of you may know where that is. Got Julian Paul here live in the studio. As always, no PG today, it's feeling a little bit under the weather. Later in the show, we've got our guest speaker, it's Phil Muffett from the Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society. Indeed, he's with us every first Saturday of the month, and indeed, sometimes, if there's five Saturdays, he's back with us again, doing a specialist talk for us. Next Saturday, and indeed every second Saturday of the month, all being well, Dr. Ogo Osamor will be back with us after his big summer recess. First up, I need to remind folks of the Sheffield Photographic Society Perspectives exhibition is now on in the Sheffield Winter Garden. It runs until 3 p.m. on Sunday, the 10th of November. So you've got a good week or so to catch that. All good stuff. If you tune in regularly to this show, you'll know that we have Gareth Morgan, who's a member of Sheffield Photographic Society and also ex-president of that society, on the show. No doubt he'll be exhibiting some of his own work in the Winter Gardens as well. It's always great and it's free. We like that word, don't we? Next up, I'm going to talk about something I saw, I forget where I saw it, but fertility rate hits a record low. Last year, the fertility rate, which is actually the average number of children born to a woman over her lifetime, fell to 1.44. Now, that's the lowest level since records began in 1938. And so the person who did this article sort of wrote about, you know, what's happened since then. And basically, after the Second World War came the baby boomers, when the fertility rate in England and Wales rose by almost 30%, make of that what you will. And then 52% of women born in 1946 had a child before the age of 24. Now, Generation X, who came after, increasingly had their first child later. Between 1990 and 2000, between 1990 and 2000, the fertility rate fell from 1.84 to 1.65, and only 20% of women born in 1997, which is on the cusp between millennials and Generation Z, had a child before the age of 25. So there were over 591,000 births in England and Wales last year, and that's the lowest number since 1977. However, the number of women of childbearing age is actually at its highest, with almost 11.9 million women aged between 15 and 44 in England and Wales in 2023. I'm pretty sure some women have children older than that as well, and possibly younger. But anyway, in the UK, women would need to have 2.08 children on average to ensure the long-term natural replacement of the population, which is known as replacement level fertility. So that's what the research is saying. We'd need to have 2.08 children on average, compared to the fertility rate, which is at the moment 1.44. All interesting stuff. Next up, as we're coming up to, well, it is that time of year. We've had Halloween. We've got Bonfire Night coming up soon. I thought I'd talk a bit about woodlands in autumn. So in autumn, the trees transform into a kaleidoscope of colours, and with nuts and berries aplenty, our wildlife is eager to take advantage of this natural harvest. So the article I read, I thought there's interesting things in here about the different things that you see around you that are really great at this time of year. Hawthorn berries. So erupting with masses of creamy white blossom in spring, by autumn the hawthorn's flowers have transformed into rich red haws. These fruits provide vital sustenance for winter thrushes and waxwings, which then return the favour, this is interesting, by dispersing the hawthorn seeds via their droppings. Another one is fly agaric fungus. Celebrated as a classic fairy tale toadstool, this instantly recognisable red and white fungus is surprisingly common under birch and pine trees between late summer and early winter. These fruiting bodies are connected to a massive mycelial network underground, which has the task of cultivating mutually beneficial relationships with the surrounding trees' roots. And that's what Something RPG has talked about in previous shows as well. Interesting. The next one, flowering ivy, might not be everybody's cup of tea, but seen both creeping along the forest floor and using trees as scaffolding, ivy is not only one of our most familiar plants, but also provides shelter for everything from butterflies to bats. Its autumnal flowers provide a last nectar hit for any insects preparing for hibernation. Also, I'd have to say about ivy, if it's mature ivy and it berries, it's really, really good for wildlife. And it looks great as well. Next up, oak acorns, beloved of squirrels, of course, of which we are having some serious battles with lately, and so are our neighbours. But produced each autumn, the acorn nut is full of nutrients such as iron and manganese. Each humble acorn has the power not only to become transformed into a tree that could live for 1,000 years, but can also provide food and shelter for colossal 2,300 other wildlife species during the course of its lifetime. Finally, the tawny owl. Widespread across Britain's woodlands, the tawny owl's nocturnal nature and cryptic camouflage make it far more commonly heard than seen. These birds mate for life, and a pair will defend their shared territory from other owls all year round, with autumn the time for reaffirming their territory for the oncoming breeding season, with the help of their eerily haunting twit and then the reply twoo call. And we're hearing them round where we live, and that means they're defending the territory. All good stuff.
Bring your songs from the woods to make you feel much better than you could know. Better than you could
dust
know.
Dust you down from tip to toe.
Dust you down from tip to toe.
Show you how the garden grows.
Show you how the garden
Hold
grows.
Hold you steady as you go.
Hold steady as you
Join
go.
The chorus if you can.
It'll make of you an honest man.
Let me bring you love from the fields. Poppies red and roses filled with summer rain. To heal the wound and still the pain that threatens again and again.
as we drag down every lover's lane.
Life's long celebrations here. I'll toast you all in.
Let me bring you all things to find. Galley Heights, Lipsong, Sabden, Chilling Ale.
What an interesting song, eh? Songs from the Woods by Jethro Tull from 1977.
Wow.
We're talking about, we play that because we're talking about Woodlands in Autumn, all good stuff. If you've just tuned in, of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, talking about science in all its different forms. Next up, this week's environment update. First up, Climate of the Parties, 16 United Nations Biodiversity Conference, Colombia, is just finished. It ran until the 1st of November 2024. So delegates from nearly every country on Earth met to assess progress against national pledges to protect nature made at the previous COP15 summit on biodiversity in December 2022, where countries reached an historic agreement to protect 30% of Earth's land and seas by 2030. So as I said, the summit ended yesterday with, well, surprise, surprise, many issues still outstanding, including finance for preserving biodiversity across the globe and strengthening up plans for protecting nature. Now, meanwhile, COP29, which is Climate of the Parties, 29 United Nations Climate Conference, that's in Azerbaijan, quite controversially, I think, from Monday the 11th to Friday the 22nd of November. So it's not started just yet, but the United Nations are already warning that progress on tackling climate change is in a worse position than a year ago after global carbon emissions jumped to a record high in 2023. The UN's also saying that Earth is on track for a catastrophic 2.8 degrees Celsius of warming. And that means the climate warming 2.8 degrees Celsius more than pre-industrial levels. Now, discussions about increasing the world's ambition to tackle global climate change will be a major theme when world leaders gather at COP29 in the coming weeks. Let's see what happens there.
Yes, like what's just happened in Spain with the amount of, they had a year's worth of water in 8 hours. Right, hydrogen. The Indian billionaire Prashant Ruia is building a new refinery on the banks of the Mersey that will run on hydrogen rather than gas, making it the UK's first emissions-free refinery. Energy. The government has confirmed that the chairman of its new state-owned company, GB Energy, Jürgen Meyer, the former boss of Siemens, will, controversially, remain based in Manchester, rather than being based in Aberdeen, which is already home to much of the UK's oil, gas and offshore wind industry. GB Energy will not supply electricity directly to households, but it will own, manage and operate clean power projects. It is hoped that the state-owned company could end the UK's reliance on foreign energy, making Britain a clean energy superpower by 2030. The government has pledged to invest £8.3 billion into the company over the course of this parliament, which is expected to be raised through a windfall tax on oil and gas firms.
Interesting stuff. Finally, water. The government has created an independent commission to undertake the biggest review of the water sector in 35 years with the aim of cleaning up the country's waterways amid public anger over sewage spills. The review is expected to lead to far-reaching reforms for water companies. Meanwhile, those companies are currently lobbying the government to let them raise household water bills by more than £160. By more than £176 over the next 5 years. All interesting stuff. Watch this space.
Over me.
Perfect Water by Blue Oyster Cult. 1985 was the track. We played that. So talk about water. The government's created an independent commission to undertake the biggest review of water sector in 35 years. All interesting stuff. Of course, you're listening to Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. As I said, we're around about the time of Halloween and around bonfire nights. And apparently, bonfires and lights attract insects, which in turn attracts bats, and that's why they're often associated with this time of year. I read an article recently about looking out for late flyers, and bats are easy now to spot as the evenings draw in. As night falls, you may be lucky enough to spot some of our most captivating nocturnal garden visitors, bats. The UK is home to 17 breeding species of bats. I think one of the most common is the tiny common pipistrelle, and it weighs only 4 to 7 grams, which is absolutely tiny. There's other types of pipistrelle, soprano pipistrelle. There's other bats as well, brown long-eared bat, Dorbenton's bat, and noctule bat. And they're the ones most commonly found in our gardens. Now, all UK bats eat insects, and flying uses up a lot of energy, so they have big appetites. A pipistrelle bat can devour 500 insects in an hour. Now, bats navigate the landscape using linear features such as hedges and streams. And contrary to popular belief, they're not blind, but they use echolocation, a system of locating things by sound, same as used by dolphins and submarines to hunt and navigate in the dark. Now, bats don't make nests. They roost in crevices such as cavities in mature trees and in roof spaces or behind fascia boards in buildings. I'm pleased to say that over the years, we've had a maternity colony of pipistrelle bats roosting in our gable end. We've not seen them for quite a few years, but it's quite an amazing thing to have. And they are protected as well by law, so and they don't do any damage. But gardens also vital habitats for an increasing number of bat species. In summer, as I said, females gather in maternity roosts or colonies, choosing somewhere warm to give birth. Usually to a single pup that feeds on its mother's milk. They remain here until the young bats can fly and feed themselves at around 3 to 6 weeks old. As I said, all UK bats are legally protected, which includes places they roost or hibernate. If you have bats in residence, you must seek professional advice and permission before disturbing them in any way. And like a lot of things in nature now, bats and other animals need as much help as they can get from us human beings. So how to help bats in your garden? Add a pond or boggy area to support aquatic insects. Provide a wide range of flowers to attract a diversity of insects all year round, which is important. Create log and leaf piles and leave hollow stems standing over winter. Minimise the use of artificial light, which can be detrimental to insects and bats. So think twice about putting all those lanterns in your garden.
The sirens are screaming and the fires are howling. We're down in the valley tonight. There's a man in the shadows with a gun in his eye and a blade shining no so bright. There's evil in the air and there's thunder in the sky and a killer's on the bloodshot streets. Oh, I'm down in the tunnel with a deadly horizon. Oh, I swear I saw a young boy down in the gutter. He was starting to foam in the heat. Oh, baby, you're the only thing in this whole world that's good and good. Wherever you are and wherever you go, there's always gonna be some light. But I gotta get out, I gotta break it out now, before the final crack of dawn. So we gotta make the most of our one night together. When it's over, you know we'll both be so alone.
Yeah.
Pat Out of Hell by Meatloaf. That was a short version. My word, it does go on a bit, that track. We played that, we talked about bats, of course. If you just tuned in, of course, you listen to the Life Science Radio Show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We're every Saturday, 11 till 12, talking about science in all its different forms. Next up, I read this in a magazine. I thought it was a fascinating article. I think it's one our Chris might like. And we'll go on to talk about sugar as well, just before we get Phil Muffet on the line, all being well. So this one's about bread. Use your loaf, said the article. It said, buy the real thing. Not all loaves are created equal, says Chris Young from the Real Bread campaign, adding there is a vast difference between what he calls additive-laden industrial dough products and, well, bread. Real bread, by which we simply mean additive-free, is a delicious, nutritious part of any meal, he says. There are a few branded loaves out there that are additive-free, including some that are genuine sourdough. To be sure, people need to read the ingredients list and look for the real bread loaf mark. Not as simple as you might think. You go and try it. Any supermarket, and good luck. Sourdough is best, says Chris Young from the Real Bread campaign. It has a trendy reputation, but really, sourdough is just proper bread. Now, Matthew Jones, the owner of Bread Ahead Bakeries, says, modern yeast is a relatively new thing, and I didn't know this. 50 or 60 years ago, pretty much all bread would have been sourdough bread. Over time, technology sped up the process of bread making, but as with other convenience foods, it meant the loss of some of the nutritional qualities of the original product. So where you can, stick to non-processed loaves. White sourdough bread, so says Matthew Jones, who owns Bread Ahead Bakeries. He says, white sourdough bread contains amino acids and can have a lower glycemic load than a highly processed industrial bread. This means it's better for the gut and overall health. Studies also suggest that the slow fermentation used in making sourdough makes it easier for the body to access micronutrients in the bread, such as iron, calcium, manganese, or zinc. Another interesting point, our brains need bread. Carbohydrates fuel our grey matter, and it needs a lot of fuel. In 2022, Spanish researchers found that the human brain alone accounts for 20 to 25% of the energy that we expend when the body is at rest. The research also noted that in addition to the high energy demands of the brain, approximately 170 grams a day of glucose is required for our brain, kidney, marrow, red blood cells and reproductive tissues, and it's needed for them organs to function properly. Now, the report says the equivalent of 8 to 9 slices of bread a day. Ooh, that sounds a lot. It doesn't have to be bread, but it's a nice way of demonstrating that we need good portions of carbohydrates throughout the day. So the body needs carbohydrate levels equivalent to approximately 9 slices of bread. Of course, it doesn't all have to come from bread, but that's the importance of carbohydrates to your body. And if you don't have enough carbohydrates, your body has to work harder to find other energy sources, which can lead to fatigue because you don't sleep properly, because while you're sleeping, your body repairs itself. If your body hasn't got enough energy to repair itself, you won't sleep properly. You can have least fatigue, brain fog and irritability. So you go to the supermarket and try and look at your loaf and good luck.
Moving on from bread to
thanks to
sugar.
Chris, he sent us a link to an article, BBC News, about sugar in the first 1,000 days of a baby's life.
Yeah, from conception to the age of 2 appears to reduce the risk of developing significant health issues in adult life, says researchers. The team analysed the impact of the end of sugar rationing in the UK, which led to a rapid doubling in the amount of sugar consumed. Their study showed limiting the intake of sugar in early life cut the risk of developing type 2 diabetes by 35% and high blood pressure by 20%. Experts believe the first 1,000 days of life are a crucial period which can shape a person's future health, as well as being responsible for establishing a lifelong sweet tooth.
That's a very interesting point, that. And this research is all to do with a UK biobank as well. So it's often known that people who came through the war, because rationing, have a sweet tooth. I know my parents did, and I think your parents did.
Because
you weren't allowed to have sugar. But the researchers took advantage of a natural experiment which took place as the UK recovered from World War II and food rationing came to an end. When the rationing of sugar and sweets concluded in September 1953, so that's, over 70 years ago, average sugar consumption in the UK population went from around 41 grams a day, which is 10 sugar cubes, to 80 grams a day, which is 20 sugar cubes almost immediately. That just makes me feel ill. No good for your teeth either, I have to say. Scientists analysed the UK Biobank database and found 60,000 people who were born between 1951 and 1956 and had their health regularly monitored. This allowed the researchers insight into the health of those born during rationing and those born shortly after. Now, both groups lived through the same societal changes over the subsequent 70 years, but a key difference was their sugar exposure in their first 1,000 days. The analysis by the team at the University of Southern California showed a 30% reduction in the risk of obesity among the sugar ration babies. It found, unsurprisingly, that the risk of type 2 diabetes and high blood pressure increased with age, but it increased faster in those conceived after sugar rationing ended. The results of that research were published in the journal Science, and it showed type 2 diabetes started on average 4 years later in adult life, where there had been sugar rationing during early childhood and blood pressure 2 years later. There was a 35% reduction in type 2 diabetes for those babies conceived during sugar rationing and a 20% reduction in high blood pressure. The mother's diet during pregnancy is important. A third of the benefits of a low-sugar diet impacted while the baby was still in the womb. However, the greatest health improvements were seen when sugar rationing covered both the period in the womb and when the baby was weaned onto solid food. It really does make you think about sugar. And I know I was talking to Dr. Ogosumwor the other day. He's a speaker on the show, All Being Well, next Saturday. And we're talking about sugar. And many moons ago, he said to me, sugar's the problem in our diet, not fat. Interesting.
Sugar, oh honey, honey, you are my candy girl, and you got me wanting you. Honey, oh sugar, sugar, of loving you.
I just can't believe it's true.
I just can't believe the wonder of this feeling too.
I just can't believe it's true.
Ah, sugar.
Sugar on it, baby.
I'm gonna make your life so sweet.
Yeah.
Sugar, Sugar by the Archies. What a track. We played that because there was an article in the BBC News about the impact of sugar in the first 1,000 days of your life. Very, very interesting stuff.
And that track was from 1969. It was a number one hit. It was called Bubblegum Music.
Bubblegum, all good stuff. If you've just tuned in, of course, listen to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms. We should have our Phil Muffet on the line. Morning, Phil.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, reasonable.
Oh, just reasonable. Phil, you've not been right since your ankle, have you?
No. It's surprising how it affects you once you've started running. When you don't run, how it gets to you. I've had 3 weeks off, and I've been climbing the walls.
Have you? Bored. Last week, frustrated.
I had to do some. So I've just been gradually getting back into it, and I've been this morning with the Couch 5K group, just helping them on.
But you've got to be, we were talking about this. You've got to be careful, though, because you don't want to injure it more while it's recovering.
No, that's true.
Oh.
So I've just been trying to run steadier, slower pace, just to build it back up. So Couch 5K group were a really good group to run with this morning, so I did some buddy running.
Oh, so for people who don't know who you are, how can that be possible? Because you're a member of the Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society, aren't you?
Yes, you are.
And they do a great job of, well, it's public Thursday information meetings. Isn't it?
Yes, well, yes. Thursday meetings, church hall down in Mexborough. Since the working men's has closed in Swinton, we've had to move venues, so we meet down in Mexborough at the moment. So we're still doing online meetings as well.
And you're getting people from everywhere, aren't you?
Yes, the really good thing about having online meetings is we are getting guest speakers from all over, and it tends to be free rather than charging because they're not having to obviously pay for travelling. And people can like give up an hour and talk to us from home or at work.
Well, from anywhere. And for a lot of the people you get on, you're getting people from who are lecturers at university, or you've got people who are studying that discipline, yes. And I suppose it's continuous professional development, and they're sharing the latest information, aren't they?
It's proper up-to-date science and technology and learning. Yes, it's really good.
So first, let me talk about the event at Wentworth Woodhouse in Rotherham. Was that the other week? 2 weeks?
A couple of weeks ago.
And did it go down a storm?
It was really good. It was sold out. We had 42 people turn up, and we had some really good comments, feedback. So we split the group into two. What we normally do is we have about 40 people or 30 people, split the group into two so you can talk to half of them, and then half can go outside. We have like a person between three or four people with a telescope, guide around the sky, look at some objects, and then when they're cold we can swap them over and do a talk to the other half, and the other half can go outside and do some observing. So we were trying to give people some practical tips on how to work the way around the sky.
Because it's not easy, is it? It's not an easy thing if you don't know what you're doing.
It isn't. For somebody who comes into astronomy and you want to find things in the sky, it is bewildering for the first time to go and find constellations. You need to know some constellations to be able to find some objects. So if you want to find Orion's Nebula, you're not going to find it in the middle of the summer. The constellation is going to be on the other side of the world. So you need to find out where the constellations are and what's in them to be able to observe them.
So you had a clearing sky, I think, for that event at Wentworth Woodhouse.
Yes, it was dodgy. However, it came good on the evening and the clouds parted and we had some really good shots of the moon, and we had Jupiter and Saturn as well. Well, it was more Saturn, to be honest. In fact, the planets are having a complete turnaround now. So we've gone all year without hardly seeing any planets. And it's just turning round so that just after sunset, Mercury this month will be just above the horizon. Venus is climbing high in the evening sky. I've noticed it twice now in the past week. Really, really bright object. Looks like a star in the west just after sunset. So if you've noticed as well, we've had some really spectacular sunsets, oranges and red skies.
Yeah.
A lot of that's been down to the dust in the atmosphere. Come on,
pollution. I can't believe it. I know, but it's true, isn't it?
Yes. And when you think back to lockdown, how white the sky was, now it started to go those more ochre colours and the orange colours, and it's pollution in the atmosphere.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and I noticed a couple of nights ago, I think it was two nights ago, there'd been a lot of aeroplanes in the sky that left a huge amount of contrails. When the sun went down, it completely lit up just after sunset, and it was all the contrails that were still visible in the sky. There were hundreds.
Wow.
And that's all the vapour from the aircraft. So, things have changed a lot this year. And then, of course, we've had all the aurora as well with the sun, solar activity. So the sun's still active, so there is still aurora, but this month have not been as good as the previous couple of months.
Well, you've been a bit spoiled, haven't you, really, in recent times? Yeah, but it gets people interested, though. So a lot of the people who came to the event at Wentworth Woodhouse, and had they been to anything like that before? Or?
No, I think they were all first-timers, from what I understand.
And they're addicted now, are they?
I don't know about that.
Newbies.
Did you walk? Yeah.
I think people who come must be interested. They're wanting to find something new.
And it's a great place to do it as well, isn't it? And
it certainly is. A nice building and it's nice surroundings. The telescopes outside have got like a parade now, where they put some tables outside on a nice gravel, like ashlar kind of area. So rather than be stood on grass, it's nice firm ground there.
Yeah.
So, personally speaking, I've had some input into this. So I really, really like Wentworth Woodhouse. I don't like the surroundings.
Yeah, brilliant. And you've got another event coming up as a club at...
Next week.
Yeah.
It's RSPB at Wharf. So people will be able to turn up and go around the nature reserve. And then there's also like a talk and some telescopes in the courtyard. So we'll be able to have a look at some objects. Because, as well as Mercury and Venus have popped up, Saturn's really well placed due south. You can see the rings; they're closing up, so it's more of a line than a big disc. And then we've got Jupiter coming up before midnight in the east, and then about midnight, Mars is starting to rise now as well. So you can see all the planets.
Wow!
From sunset up to about 12 o'clock now, and not only that. There's also Uranus, which is in Taurus, which is near Jupiter. And there's also Neptune in Pisces. Now, you're going to have a telescope to see, or binoculars to see Uranus. You might see Neptune with binoculars, but you'd be better off with a telescope. But Neptune's going to look like a star. But this weekend, I'm going to Cornwall to meet my friend Joe with Michael Waterfield and Glenn Marsden from the club, and we're going to do a bit of astronomy on the lizard if it's clear.
Oh, if it's clear.
We should be able to pick out a couple of these planets.
Wow, and if it's not clear, you'll be going at pub.
Yes, absolutely.
But it's a great, I remember you telling us about this before, the lizards must be in a phenomenal place to see things.
It's 50 degrees south, so it's a good 3.5 degrees further south than South Yorkshire. And it's not much, but when you look at the sky, all those tricky objects are really, really low down. Suddenly, you get an extra 3.5 degrees in the sky, and it makes a big difference.
Wow.
So, you're looking more up than down. So it's really good. Oh, there's also the Sutchinson Comet is still available. You can see it in binoculars in the constellation at Ephesus that's starting to set in the evening. But it's like it's losing its tail, but it's still visible. So that's another one to have a look out for. And there's also Comet Olbers in the same area, which is losing its brightness now, because these are starting to move back out of the solar system. And as they're moving out of the solar system, the sun has less effect on them. So the comet's tail starts to diminish. But they're interesting objects to follow. So I've been following some minor planets this year, like Ceres and Vesta and Pallas. And then I've had this lovely comet come round. And it's interesting to see some new solar system objects flying round. So it's not just the big planets. There's also the little planets as well you can follow.
That, so yeah.
I've got a star map. I've been plotting them on as well to see how the orbits differ. And it's surprising how your conventional planets move different. Move different to your minor planets and your comets. You can physically see they are different entities in the solar system.
So going back to the event at the Old Moor, the RSPB Old Moor, is that next Saturday or is it Sunday?
Next Saturday.
Because you usually do solar Sundays, but is that an afternoon? That's an afternoon thing.
That's from the summer. This is an evening event.
This is an evening event. So it's next Saturday. What time does that start then?
It'll be about 6 o'clock. I think we're going to be there about 5.
Oh, are you actually going to go, Phil? Blimey.
Yeah, so the thing is, go on the RSPB website and have a look to see what availability is, what times.
It is ticketed, so you do have to pay to get into the reserve bits, that part of that.
Yeah, it's part of it, yeah.
Brilliant.
So, consult with the RSP. So we've not organised it, we're just part of it.
Ah, right. So you've actually put that out on social media as well, haven't you? On Facebook.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And I think you put it on Twitter as well.
Yeah, it should be.
Let's hope you get some good weather, because the problem is with astronomy, we're into getting into autumn, winter now, aren't we?
Yes. So I've had a really good year doing some observing from home, but this last month has been really, really tricky. So I've been following the flare star in Corona Borealis, which is now beginning to set. The experts promised it was going to flare up this summer, and it hasn't. I've been following the light curve, and it's been hovering around magnitude 10. But it's supposed to pop this year. So the thing is, if it gets much later, we'll not be able to see it because it'll be too close to the sun. But the other thing is with the comets, I've been following this comet, Sutchinson, and it's like every week I've seen it once, and it's because it's been so, the weather's been really bad. So the clouds have been not good.
Oh.
But I've been following it and plotting it on my map and seeing how it's travelling through the sky.
So the sky's been unkind to you. You can't go running. You can't go running.
It's been a bad month.
It's been a bad month. The only way is up, Phil.
Yeah, I can only think Jupiter and Uranus in Taurus, which is my birth sign, is affecting me.
Oh, do you think so? Oh, I say. Interesting. So what else is coming up? Because it is a good time of year, isn't it? Are you doing anything up at your observatory at Hoover?
We're doing PBV on the 15th, but it's all sold out.
Is it?
Our tickets on the Eventbrite, and they go on at midnight, whatever day they go on sale, and like within a couple of hours of all.
Well, this is a testament to how popular your club's getting.
Yeah, the problem, it'd be nice to put more on for people, but the problem is, we've got limited resources.
Well,
and we're trying to limit ourselves to we'll do a public viewing event at the observatory and one out in a month, so do two in a month.
Wow.
Doing more than that starts to be a bit of a drain on resources.
Well, and because as well, you most of you've got day jobs as well, aren't you? You're doing this voluntarily.
Oh, and that's the other thing is, if people are like dealing with the public, you don't actually get time to do your own astronomy for yourself.
Yeah.
Which is an important thing.
It is. So they're public viewing evenings, and they're at your observatory near Hoover Stand again, not far from Wentworth.
Yes.
Woodhouse. Interesting. So they're selling out then, are they? Blimey.
Yes, which is really good.
It is really good.
They have been popular for years, to be fair. But now we're just selling them the events differently now, which is on Eventbrite.
Yeah, well, that's the modern way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everything's online. Really well. So have you had any new members to your club then?
I think we've had two members in the past month.
Wow.
Past 2 months. Yeah, so we're hovering about 40-ish people. You tend to find you have a core nucleus of members, and then you've got people that come in and go over a year or two. Some people might stop 1 or 2 years and go on. But you always have that core group that like do most things.
But you always say
most clubs are like that.
Yeah, and you most clubs. You were saying that about getting young people interested, because there's so many other things that young people are interested in rather than.
That's true. It's really, really tricky to get children into clubs. It's all middle aged and older people now, because I don't know what, well, I know children doing other stuff, but they're not interested in actually being in a club. But we have Cubs and Scouts evenings for getting the badges, and on the PVE we always get children. But the problem is the children aren't stopping, they're going off and doing other stuff, but they're interested.
They're interested. Yeah.
There'll be a Waffle Fires PB. There'll be children come and they'll be really interested. But it's like being a member. It's like they don't want to get that involved.
No, so, well, it's a modern thing, isn't it?
There's that much online as well. I mean, my son's 20 now and everything's online.
Yeah.
And in fact, my son helped cook tea yesterday and he says he wants Yorkshire puddings with a steak. Because my wife had been out for a tea with her friends. So I said, I'm not cooking Yorkshire puddings. So my son says, well, I'll do them. I said, how are you going to do them? He said, I'll look it up online. So he went online.
Wow.
Watched a 2-minute video on cooking Yorkshire puddings, and we had Yorkshire puddings with a steak. And they were as good as my wife's cooking.
No way. Hey, tell him not to do that. Oh, he's off and running, but isn't that amazing? But well,
it's absolutely online. Everything's online. Everything's online. I mean I like my books, but I'm finding more and more things online. YouTube and Google and other stuff. It's all there's everything's going online.
Well, I'm afraid
There's some lovely. I'm starting to find some lovely YouTube's videos on astronomy. There's some guys doing stuff on photography and finding things in the sky. And there's some really good professionally edited YouTube videos now.
Yeah.
They are worth looking at.
But it's still a learning resource, isn't it?
It is, yes.
But, you know, in this world of AI, and, you know, you've got to be careful sometimes what you're actually reading and looking at, I guess.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, sourcing information is a key part. General stuff is okay, but if you're looking to something a bit niche or a bit special, you do need to, like, be aware of who you're actually looking at and listening to. Because you do, when I watch astronomy videos, sometimes I see stuff. I think, well, I don't think that's quite right. But there's some other people. I mean, there's some clever people out there doing stuff. But yeah,
the Brian Cox, Professor Brian Cox, doing his solar system series?
Yes, I have. It's absolutely brilliant.
He's interesting, isn't he? Because he covers such complicated things in such a way.
I will admit I wasn't a Brian Cox fan when he first came out, but I don't know if his experience or if he's had some training, but I think he's a lot better now at presenting than he used to be. So he's kind of winning me over.
Well, the thing is, it's about getting people interested in the fundamentals of what are very complicated things, aren't they, when he talks about, well, it's like when you talk about why things are as they are, gravity and this and that and the laws of this physics and the, you know, it's phenomenal, and he makes it sound so easy.
He's a physicist and an astronomer as well, and he knows his field. So
let's be fair, Phil, he did start out as a keyboard player, I think, in the band D-Ream. He did. So how on earth he got to doing that, I'll never know.
Like students, isn't it? I mean, students do all them kind of things.
Do all them kind of things to be cool, but but it's all about.
Through history, a lot of astronomies come from a musical background and an alcohol background. Most of the famous amateur astronomers own breweries.
Or
they were into music. Yeah. Because beer was a massive money-making industry, and the people with the money could afford to have telescopes.
Is that right?
They could afford to have telescopes built for themselves. You couldn't go to the shop and buy a telescope. You had to go and order one and have specialists build them one.
Wow.
And anyway, a lot of astronomers being based on alcohol.
I've never heard that. So you know when you lost your original club then at Swinton?
Well, our working men's club.
Well, exactly.
We met in a pub.
Well, exactly, and that's the thing about meeting in church hall. It's not quite the same, is it?
No. We've had to go dry.
Oh dear. Well, I never knew that, but I guess Queen Brian May, he wasn't he an astrophysicist or something?
Yeah. Yes. Again, into music. And again, if you go back through time, the musicians, people that were educated tend to be at sciencey and into music as well. So it was all part of it.
It's a combination thing. Now you're into your star sign, so I'm gonna test you on something here now. Queen, the cover, the Queen's emblem of the band was designed by Freddie Mercury because he was an art student. But what does it depict? The Queen logo of the band. It's the, all their star signs. Go and have a look. Two, I think, were Leo. So there's two of the same. The two lions for Leo. And then the others are the star signs. The other two, get that. You're going to go off and run and have a look at that now, aren't you? But I don't know.
This isn't fake news, is it?
It isn't. No, it's true. I forgot where I read it. Maybe I was researching Queen for another show or something. And Freddie Mercury designed that logo because I think he was an art student at Goldsmiths or something, which, yes. Who knew? It takes you everywhere, this astronomy business, to beer and to record labels. You're going to have a look now. Everybody's going to be like, right, we're off. She's made this up. Phil's made it up about beer. She's made it up about Queen's logo. But it's true. Star signs, important.
Yeah.
And you'll always say that star signs, the horoscope, is linked to astronomy.
Yes, well, in the ancient times, religion, astronomy and astrology, it was all the same subject. It's only as time's moved on that it's gradually split into these different areas. Because you see, the gods were in the sky. When we talk about gods in ancient times, really they're talking about forces of nature.
Yes.
And the thing is, the Chinese nailed this thousands of years ago. They didn't treat the sky and the and weather and nature as gods. They realized that there were forces of nature and there were natural forces, whereas Greek, Egyptian, Roman cultures, the gods were the forces, if you see what I'm saying. It was, they just used different words. So we gradually realised that actually, you know, astronomy and religion are two separate subjects. But we talk about heaven, we're talking about the sky. Where does your spirit go? Into the sky.
If you look at
Egyptians believe that Osiris was the pharaoh in the sky. His spirit was the constellation of Orion in the sky.
Yeah,
so fascinating. It was all linked. The sun, the moon, and the planets all influence what we do. Now, when you think about it, the sun and the moon do influence us, and it's an easy step to take. Well, the planets do, and the sky does as well. Now, it does influence us, but it's not going to tell you when you're going to fall in love with somebody or you're going to have an accident. So the boundaries have just been blurred and stretched.
Well, we went to Warwick Castle we've just been this week because we're getting a bit interested in history. But the interesting thing was they were talking about the Bayeux Tapestry, and they were talking about when William the Conqueror invaded England in 1066. And the downfall of King Harold was foreseen because, is it Halley's Comet?
Halley's Comet.
They saw that as a sign of something bad.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so somebody used it to their advantage, and it was also a prophecy of doom to somebody.
Prophecy of doom. But the Halley's Comet, for example, is rarely seen, is it?
Yes, 86 years, I think it is.
It's 86
year short period comet. So this one we've just seen, Suchin Sound one, is one of the Oort cloud. It's coming from the Oort cloud. We talked about this earlier on this year.
Yes, we did.
It's being captured by the sun, and now it's being flung back out into the solar system to be back in about 80,000 years.
Blimey.
So, well, that's what they've worked out the period to be anyway. So it's now a solar system object.
Wow. So that's what you've been tracking, is it?
Yes. And the other thing is, I think this past week, a comet has flown into the sun. Now, I can't remember what the name of the comet was. It was like 20, T24S3 or something. I can't remember the name of it now. And then once I've flown into the sun, if you go onto the SOHO page, which is the satellite that's following the sun, they have a solar heliosphere camera, and it obscures the sun, but you can see what's happening around it, and you can see the corona into space. So when they have a flare, you can see it flaring off. But you can also see stars in the background, and you can also see comets fly around the sun. Well, this comet's like kind of gone towards the sun. It's vaporized before it's actually got to the sun.
Wow.
So that's worth watching that. And that's
so on, that's SOHO satellites. Go and have a look. Well, yeah. We're fast going to have to let you go, Phil, I'm afraid. Yeah. One of your keen listeners was disappointed last time we kicked you off. When you just got going, he said, oh, no. I said, well, we've got the film showing after us, so what can we do? Brilliant stuff as always, Phil. I hope you get recovered soon, and we'll speak to you in about a month's time, if not before.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Have a good month.
Yes, thank you, Phil. Too. Bye-bye, Phil. Bye-bye. Bye.
See you all soon. Bye.
Little girl passed by, you can smell the wishing well. You can smell.